Access Cast, an Accessibility initiative, presents Unstoppable Mindset, the podcast where inclusion, diversity, and the unexpected meet. Hi, I'm Michael Hinkson, Chief Vision Officer for Accessibility and the author of the number one New York Times bestselling book, Thunderdog, the story of a blind man, his guide dog, and the triumph of trust. Thanks for joining me on my podcast as we explore our own blinding fears of inclusion, unacceptance, and our resistance to change. We will discover the idea that no matter the situation or the people we encounter, our own fears and prejudices often are our strongest barriers to moving forward. The Unstoppable Mindset podcast is sponsored by Accessibility. That's ACCESSIBE. Visit www.accessibility.com to learn how you can make your website accessible for persons with disabilities and to help make the internet fully inclusive by the year 2025. Glad you dropped by. We're happy to meet you and to have you here with us. Welcome to another episode of Unstoppable Mindset. Thanks for being here. Hope that you enjoy what we have to talk about today. We have a guest who I've been looking forward to for quite a while, and circumstances keep causing us to have to delay getting together, but we finally made it, didn't we, Ian?
Yes, exactly. Nice to be here, Michael.
Thanks, and it's good to have you here. Ian Walker has a very interesting background, and I'm going to say up front, one of the interesting things about Ian, and one that I'm really anxious to learn more about, is that he himself has what people would classify as a disability, and that's fascinating to me, needless to say. So why don't we start there? You say that at some point in your life, you sensed you were different. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So I was raised in a very musical family, and music and the arts were really important. And especially for me, when we found out that I was diagnosed later on in my life with ADHD, but being a kid from the 1970s, they used to, you know, call me hyperactive. And so ADHD wasn't diagnosed, wasn't used then, but I basically had all of the elements of, dealing with ADHD. And so that's attention deficit hyper disorder for people that don't understand the disorder. And I dealt with a lot of stuff. My grandmother and my mother were very musical, and they acted as my mentors. And once we sort of found out that I wasn't your average, person here that was going through the regular school system. My grandmother suggested to my parents that I'd always loved to sing and that I should take singing lessons. And that opened up a huge, door for me, a level of confidence, and self-esteem. And then I had to deal with all the bullying that went on because I was a young man who wanted to sing.
When did all this occur?
So I was born in 1960.
Okay.
And by around 1970, 1971, I'd already been a boy soprano. My grandmother really trained me very well. And as a result, people come up to me all the time and say, "Oh, Ian, when you sing, you have great diction. Yay, Grandma." She taught yes. me so well about your D's and T's and that you want to be heard at the back of the hall or the back of the church, And that was the days before amplification, right? Where amplification is used so much now. So I got all of the great beginnings, and grandma would work with me on the piece and the finesse and the phrasing and the diction, and mom would help me with rhythm. Sometimes my rhythm wasn't always right on track, and she'd also help me with, the finesse, more maybe about dynamics and, interpretation of the songs. And so, this being the early 70s, there wasn't a lot of great selection out there for young boys to have to learn to sing. And so because I was raised in the church, I sang a lot of early boy soprano stuff, so a lot of Easter pieces of hallelujahs and, mm-hmm. A lot of those kinds of wonderful things, great training, I really, really wished we had recorded my voice as a young soprano. I don't have a boy soprano. I don't have any, except vague little memories every once in a while pops in my head. But so then, around 1971, 72, I was in grade 4, grade 5, and they determined that I needed to go and deal with my ADHD issues. So it being the 70s, they took kids out of the regular school system. This is here in Canada. They took kids out of the regular school system and put them into a special school for disability issues. Well, I was always really good on all of my, English, geography, history, all of the main core, subjects, but my weakness was math. And so, as now, probably what they would do is just, have a special tutor for me. But anyways, I had to be taken out of the school system, put 2 years behind, and thank goodness in my second year, we had an amazing teacher who was a background of the military, was a lieutenant colonel here in Canada. And he, when you were in his class, you were like in the army. His name was Mr. Smith. And so we classmates almost saluted when we came in to see him. But he was very, very good with me. And he recognized and said, this boy is intelligent. He's got, English and history and geography and, an interest in science. What's he doing here? So he made a special, presentation for me to the, to the board or whatever, and said, Ian needs to be put back into the regular classroom curriculum. And so I did grade 6 and then to grade 8 back in the rotary system. But I was 2 years behind, my peers. So, still continuing on with my music, was in a lot of different shows at that time. They had a kids version or student version for the pirate, Gilbert and Sullivan's, not Pirates, but the other one, Pinafore, HMS, yeah. Pinafore. And I got to play the captain, and
So you were not the model of a modern major.
The model of the modern major in general. No, no. That's a wonderful twisting song. Oh my goodness. It's takes a long time to learn all the lyrics in that song. Yeah.
But you Yeah, go ahead.
So there's a little bit about, dealing with the disability stuff.
So do you regard yourself as a person with a disability today?
Okay. Yeah.
Why? Why is that, and what do you think about that?
Well, because of... Okay, so It took me 27 years to get my BA. And a lot of the hindrances that when, you know, I'd gone through high school and did some other sort of other courses along the way to, you know, check out, see what I really wanted to do. But I really wanted to have a degree in music. And when I got into the program at the University of Western Ontario, very good school for singers and choral people, I just couldn't handle the program. I could handle all the artistic, all the creative stuff, but I couldn't handle the academics. And that's where we really found out that I had a disability with my writing, that there was some problems, that I'd leave out words, that, you know, my sentence structure wasn't great. I couldn't do syntax from one paragraph to the other paragraph. And there was just some other, you know, other stuff along the way that I really, it was really determined to me that I did have a disability as, you know, as an ADHD student.
How did you deal with that then, in terms of addressing the issue of filling in word gaps and so on?
Well, before, you know, voice activated software, right?
Yes.
I would have to read my papers over, like, you know, and that was part of the chore, is getting the work done way before the deadline was, you know, was required. But then when voice activated software came in, I used Dragon, naturally speaking, in the early years. And so then eventually it could read it to me. And then I went, oh my goodness, you know, I've left out a verb here, or I've left out an adjective there, or, you know, the sentence didn't make sense. And then, you know, as I learned more about syntax from the next paragraph to the next paragraph, it was difficult. And I've still got some of my papers from those, some of the early beginnings before I was officially diagnosed with ADHD. And I go, oh my goodness, like, look at the mistakes, and, you know, as well as spelling mistakes and things that now, you know, software can, and Grammarly, naturally speaking, no, Grammarly. I like Grammarly. It really punches up my work now.
I haven't checked lately, but for me, Grammarly has been somewhat inaccessible, which is a little bit of a problem. But it doesn't, at least I haven't found that it works with screen readers well. But I haven't looked at it now in a couple of years, so maybe there have been some improvements. But I do agree with you and appreciate the concept that software helps us a lot if we're open to using it. I remember Dragon Dictate back in the very early days. And And there, well, and it wasn't overly accessible, and Dragon wasn't overly accessible. There is a product now, I use a screen reader called JAWS that verbalizes whatever text comes across the screen. And a gentleman over in England has created a product called JSAY, which is sort of a bridge between Dragon and JAWS, and actually makes the combination a lot more accessible. So it's very easy now to use Dragon, naturally speaking, and use it effectively. And voice input software like Dragon has made such a difference, I think, to so many people. It's so much easier to compose now, as you point out.
Mm-hmm. And I love it. Like, you know, I'm generally a Microsoft guy. So, you know, I tried Mac, and it's just too complicated for my brain.
So, I think Mac is great for graphics. And a lot of people use it, but I too tend toward Windows.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, now that when I'm writing and stuff, I just love it that AI can either use Dictate or, you know, or just click on to Grammarly and clean up some stuff that may need it.
has Grammarly ever said, "You dumb bunny, aren't you ever going to figure that out?"
Oh no.
Just
no.
checking, just checking.
They may say, you might have another, you have two or three other options, you know.
that's something though. My wife would say that though, but that's what wives do, right?
There we go.
Well, you know, you talk about your grandfather being a preacher or a pastor. How did his influence affect you?
Okay, so this is great grandfather. So I had two great grandfathers on my dad's side who were Baptist preachers. So faith has always been very important in our family. And, you know, and then along with the music and stuff, my grandma, the one that was my vocal coach and everything, she was a music director for 25 years in her Baptist church and directed choirs as well as all, you know, musical events. So between both my mom and dad had both strong faith, and I was raised in the Baptist Convention of Ontario and Quebec, or Baptist of Canada. So our faith has always been very, very important. And that's a really good point, because in my later years, as I, you know, was learning more about the disorder and the whole deal, when I would be really frustrated, I could just turn to my faith. I could turn to God and just, you know, say, "God, I need strength here. I need help. I need support." And, and then the thing was, I had lots of people in the family praying for me as well. Generally, all of them, on both sides of my mom and dad's side, are a lot of, you know, secure Christians. So they've been Christians for a long time. And so I would really say on both my mom and dad's side, generally, is we're a family of faith. And that made a huge, huge difference. Actually, I could tell you another story. When I was going through some really bad bullying, so this is public school, just before, I think, grade six, grade seven, mm-hmm. My mom formed a prayer group for children that were having disabilities, mostly boys. There were some girls in the group. And that prayer group continued. I think they got together like once or twice a month. That prayer group continued for a good 10 years. And I know that I'm walking out of the blessings of that prayer group because of the faithfulness of my mom and her friends that prayed me for strength to get through the issues that I needed to get through.
And they passed that on to you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty cool. I think that faith is a very important thing, and I think that it is very relevant for us to have faith. However we express it, that inner strength is very important to all of us. And I'm sure that you, especially when you talk about bullying and so on, clearly you've had a lot of tests of that.
And I have.
and you know, at the same time, you know as well as I that a lot of the bullying comes simply from ignorance and people just don't yes. understand. And you can choose either to hold a grudge and create a lot of animosity, or mm-hmm. you can move beyond that.
That's right. Well, I think what happened was, you know, when I got to a point kind of just sort of before my 30s, and I just didn't like all of the excess baggage that, you know, that I was still having. I was having, you know, bad dreams of these experiences and stuff. And just right around there, I was starting to have some marital issues with my first wife. And so I got into some really good Christian counseling. And, you know, we had to, go deep down the well, you know, to deal with this stuff. But once we got it out and I was able to talk about it, and the other thing was to learning how to forgive those who had really, you know, hurt me. Like as in the Bible, you know, Jesus says, you know, forgive those who may not know what they've done, right? And so once I was able to do that, oh my goodness, a huge burden was lifted from my heart and my whole presence. And I just, you know, I was able to carry on. And I think a lot of the blessings that I've had over the last, say, 10 or 15 years is because I've gotten rid of that, those burdens of, you know, of not, of those burdens of unforgiveness, still holding on to those issues. So I'm grateful that, you know, I learned that experience relatively young in my life.
You have written a book.
I have.
That I'd love to hear more about.
Okay, so I'm holding it up here. So it's called Stirring My Soul to Sing, Overcoming ADHD Through Song. And it's available on Amazon. It's available on Barnes & Noble, and you can find it on a lot of other, platforms.
Is there an audio version of the book?
Not yet. I'm just starting to think about that too. So, and when we were getting it, you know, published, and my resources didn't include in the budget to do an audio book, but I'm thinking about doing one very soon. So, yeah.
It won't earn you money, but you might explore in Canada. I'm not sure what the process is, but you might reach out to the Canadian National Institute for the Blind. There is a program in most countries. It used to be called Talking Books. It sort of still is, I guess, to some of us who remember those terminologies. But yeah. Blind people are... and books created for blind people are exempt from standard copyright laws. And so in the United States, contacting the National Library Service for the blind and physically handicapped, print impaired or print disabled, however you want to call it, readers, they record books. Now it's only available to blind and other print challenged people. But it is also a place where you might look at going. But awesome. did you publish the book yourself, or was it published through?
I went through a Christian faith-based publisher in Canada called Word Alive Press.
Okay.
So yeah,
and I would think that they should be able to help you get the book out on programs like Audible.
Yeah, well, that's kind of in the works. So we're just setting up the time and, you know, the studio time to be able to do it. And I'm hoping to have it done, you know, probably by the fall. So, yeah.
Well, when we did Thunder Dog back in 2010 and 2011, it was published by Thomas Nelson. So that's the largest Christian publisher, now part of HarperCollins.
Yes.
I didn't read it. They actually had someone else read it, but they did make that part of the process. And I kind of encouraged and somewhat insisted that it needed to also be an audio book. As it turns out, the Library of Congress has also produced it along with our second book, Running with Roselle, so that they're directly available to blind people. Of course, you know, it's always nice when people buy it through Audible as opposed to the Library of Congress, because us poor starving authors...
Right.
Our dogs make a little bit of money. So, you know, Alamo, my guide dog, always says whenever we travel, please tell people to buy books because we're running low on kibbles, you know.
Exactly. That's great.
But tell me more about, you know, the book.
So for the longest time, you know, I was really thinking about, should I write a book? And just sort of sitting down and thinking about the process and, you know, like this is my first effort. I've had other pieces published in different sort of music publications and things like that. But I just went, you know, can I do this? So I sat down and I just sort of came up with potential chapter, you know, like chapter titles. And then, and, you know, wanted to start at the beginning and sort of work my way through. And that's how I started to do it. And so it took about 5 years to write. Some things were very easy that just flowed really well. Some of the other real difficult issues took a long time. One particular chapter in dealing with the relationship with my ex-wife, I wrote at least 50 times. And then I sent it to my publisher and, you know, I got it back with lots of red ink and crossed out this and said, no, Ian, we've taken your chapter, we've edited it now. And if you want to publish with us, it has to be this way. And I went, you know, and when I read it and I went, oh my goodness, like, why did this take me so long to, you know, but it's the process of getting it out, right? The good as well as the bad. And so I was really, really happy, you know, when I read their sort of version of that particular chapter. And then different things just started to come a long way. So the first part is about the difficulties of dealing with ADHD from a child to early 20s. But the other part is about the success of my career as working in arts management, in choral choral arts management. I've done some orchestral, but most of my career. So I've worked with some major choral organizations in Canada. And, you know, I've worked with some incredible artists. And so I'm not sure if you're familiar with Maureen Forrester. She's an amazing classical vocal artist. She was, you know, big in the 40s to the early 2000s. And she had an opportunity to sort of work with her, and she sort of took me under her wing. I'm an alumnus of the Tanglewood Institute program for actually called Boston University Tanglewood Institute. And so when I was down at Tanglewood in 1981, I got to spend 20 minutes with Leonard Bernstein and had an amazing conversation with him about one of his choral pieces. And, you know, the other one who comes to mind is I had an over 10-year relationship with Sir David Wilcox. He's the conductor for, or was the conductor for King's College Cambridge. You know, at Christmas times, Christmas from King's is usually broadcast, and oh my goodness, Sir David was just one of the most amazing and generous people I've ever met in my life. And so we, you know, became friends, and then we emailed for over 10 years, you know, right up till he was in his early 80s then, right up to his early 90s. And he lived to be 95. And, you know, so I wanted to talk about the other side of my career, which was still having a disability, but basically getting to do what I wanted to do, which was to work in music. And, I talk about some of the teachers that I worked with and, you know, choral experiences. And it's generally an arts book for that arts person in your family who you don't know what to deal with.
Yeah. So when you were down in Tanglewood, did you ever get to sing with the Boston Symphony?
No, because our program was the Young Artist Vocal Program. But we had all kinds of speakers coming in throughout the summer. We were there for 8 weeks, and it was an incredible program. And Saji didn't come and speak to us, but we could go at any time, you know, with the student card and go and listen to rehearsals all the time. And our choral director just recently passed away, Leonard Atherton, who used to be a part of University of Muncie, Indiana. But he was a Canadian first, and he did some work up here, like just not very far from where I live in Hamilton, Ontario. And so I was just amazed at the choral people that he knew and that I knew. And then, you know, we come down to Tanglewood and, you know, it becomes international. So so it's wonderful. And our group has stayed together this summer. This coming summer, we'll celebrate 41 years. And we've got composers, we've got conductors, we've got singers have had incredible careers. And so we're just, you know, through the wonder of the internet that we're able to still, you know, stay connected. We've had about 3 reunions throughout the years too.
That's pretty exciting.
Going back to Tanglewood.
How long did it take you to act? How long did it take you to write the book?
Well, it was about 5 years. And then I was looking for the right publisher, and I was going to publish with one in the States, but there was some problems with, you know, the price of the book then and having to add the tariff coming back on. And, you know, for a paperback, it was going to be like between $35 or $40 for, you know, who would pay that? So I'm connected with a very wonderful group here called the Word Guild for Christian writers and Christian folk who write for, you know, for Christian media. And so some of my friends said, Ian, why don't you check out Word Alive Press? And it's been a very good, you know, association being connected with them. So they really helped me get the book out there. And now it's gone into 43 international bookstores and websites. It's gone all over the world. The last it was in China, and it was being looked at in Russia. I was just totally blown away. So it's
that
in
is
English.
Exciting.
It is. And, you know, I'm working on a second book right now. So it's not going to have, you know, I've already told my story. Like, you know, now it's time to finesse and have some fun.
Yeah, we're sort of in the same boat, Thunderdog having been published, and it tells my story. And we have talked in previous episodes of Unstoppable Mindset about working on another book, and I interviewed Kerry Wyatt Kent, who I'm working with, who's collaborating with me on writing it. We also had Susie Florian, who's the lady who wrote and helped me write. She's a professional writer, and she helped me write Thunderdog. She is also very involved with Christian writers on the West Coast, so we should probably introduce the two of you.
That would be wonderful.
All right, yeah. I will do that this afternoon. But
we
are now getting ready to write another book. And this one's going to be more about fear and learning to better address and control fear and make it more of a positive thing than when something happens and you just become so blinded by fear that you can't move forward or do anything. So our tentative title is A Guide Dog's Guide to Being Brave, me having worked with 8 guide dogs. And we're just about to have a contract signed on that, which is really exciting. So we'll be telling people about that as it moves forward. But I'm with you. The story's out there. So now it's time to be able to branch out and do other things.
Yeah. But that's really interesting that you're looking at writing a book about fear, because I've really felt in the last little while that a lot of ADHD issues open the door to fear. And I was thinking about writing a book on fear, but I just, I've seen it, you know, time and time again. And a lot of like part of, you know, part of my journey has really also been to just break down the doors and say, I'm not going to be held by fear anymore. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, it took me 27 years to get that degree, and I was bound and determined that I was going to get it. I, you know, I didn't think it was going to take that long, but there, you know, and there were elements of fear that I had to break through and just say, no, I'm not going to let that, you know, just one little element stop me from achieving my goal.
Hence the concept of unstoppable.
Exactly. Yeah.
Let me ask this. I'm just curious. Have animals been a part of your life and helped you in moving forward in any way?
Yes. Growing up, we had an amazing Labrador, and her name was Shadow, Black Lab. And when I would have bad days, she would always come near me and sit with me. And just, she sensed that, you know, that I'd had a bad day or had been bullied or whatever. And we had a tent trailer. So sometimes if it was a really bad day, I'd go out underneath one of the beds and sit with her just, you know, for a half an hour, 45 minutes. And she just helped me to really calm down. And then Elaine and I, my second wife, we have a Shih Tzu Havanese, and her name is Faith. And oh my goodness, she is such a good dog. And I recently had some health issues, and she came and sat with me almost every day, you know, while I was recovering. And yes, I love animals very, very much. I'm not a cat person. That's the only thing. I'm a dog person.
We are now going to draft you to be interviewed for the book.
Great.
So I think there's a story there, and I think it will be fun to make it part of the book because we will be talking to other people. And
sure, I would love to write a story for that. That'd be wonderful.
Well, we'll get you interviewed, and we'll be working on that. Definitely.
Okay.
But you know, it is interesting. Animals have such a positive effect on all of us if we allow that. And I understand you're not a cat person. We do have a cat.
Oh, do you? Okay.
And she is the most verbal creature I think I have ever known. She talks to us all the time. Mm-hmm. We rescued her, and it took her a couple of months to decide that maybe we were reasonable creatures to have in her house. You know how cats are.
Yes.
So we do have a great relationship with her, and she's
that's good.
She's also
the reason I
us.
Don't like cats is I'm allergic to them. So yeah, that's why
I understand.
You know, but a couple of my friends have some tolerable cats that I can adhere to.
We had, when we lived in many years ago in Mission Viejo, California, we had neighbors whose kitchen faced our kitchen. And they discovered that from time to time, I would drag out my ice cream freezer and make homemade ice cream. We actually had wireless intercoms between the two kitchens. And whenever they looked through their window and saw the freezer going, they would announce that they'd be over with bowls and spoons about 6:30 or 7 o'clock. And sure enough, Al and Linda would show up with bowls and spoons. We also had two cats. They were sisters.
Now,
Al was not a cat person. These two cats, every time he came over, would jump up on the couch where he was sitting, and they would wrap themselves around his head. And purr, and you knew that he was a little bit uncomfortable. But what's really funny is what's really funny is eventually, there was a cat in the neighborhood that would occasionally go to their house, and he fed the cat, and suddenly the cat adopted him, And he became a cat person, which was really hilarious.
That's funny.
But animals are a part of our lives in so many ways. So you took 5 years to write the book. It was published in 2018 and it's doing well.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask this. So you come from a musical family, obviously.
Yes.
Your parents and so on. Do you have any musical relatives that maybe some of us would have heard of?
Yes, I do. So on my grandmother's side, my great uncles and everything generally were all very artistic, loved music or arts and so my third cousins are Jonathan and Jordan Knight from the New Kids on the Block.
Mm.
So, and we got to see them in concert because I'm about 10 years older than they are. So
that's why they're the new kids.
That's right. So we got to see them in concert in, I think it was around 2014 or 15. And I understand they're coming to Toronto again in the near future. I think this coming June or something. Anyways, yeah. So they're, that's pretty amazing that, but vocal and choral music have been a part of my mom's side of the family. I have other cousins, second cousins or third cousins that have also been in some international choirs and, sang in church choirs as well as, community. One cousin, she sung in the Toronto Mendelssohn Choir for a number of years, so which is 160 voice choir.
You were part of that for a while, weren't you?
I was. I was in the Toronto Mendelssohn Youth Choir, and that was wonderful. And as a result, Robert Cooper, who has been my good friend and mentor, he was the artistic director of that program. And oh my goodness, we had wonderful years, wonderful training. And I have still about, good 10 or 15 friends from those years that we've still stayed in touch. And that's also at least at the 40-year mark too. So,
well, I have to ask, do your third cousins acknowledge you as as a member of the family?
Oh yeah, they know who I am.
Oh, just checking.
Yeah, they know who I am. Well, you see, their grandmother was my favorite great aunt. Okay, and so
Works.
So she is mentioned in the book quite a lot, and she was an amazing painter. I have like five or six of her paintings in my house, and so the eldest. Jonathan knew her fairly well as the Jordan was a couple years behind. And so, he didn't get to spend as much quality time as Jonathan did to, connect with her. And they were living in Boston. So, yeah. So, but she was wonderful. Oh my goodness. I love spending time with my Aunt Olive.
Well, obviously ADHD was something that you dealt with very well, but even so, and music helped you deal with that. But was your ADHD ever a problem when you were dealing with music, singing or studying music?
And that's really interesting because some other people have asked me that. No, and the only thing that I have a problem with right now, maybe it's partly age, but is memory. And so when I'm memorizing words with music, there's no problem. When I have to memorize written script part, it's a real difficult time unless I sort of have worked out some steps along the way, like, okay, I'm telling this part of the story and this is what it means and da da da, so that and it's kind of like I have to sort of like do a plot analysis But when I'm learning music with lyrics and music together, there's no problem. And I would love to see an MRI of my brain to when I'm trying to do one or the other, just to, you know, to understand what's going on up there. Why, what, you know.
But it's interesting that
the problem.
But it's interesting that you can use that as a breakthrough to really, in a lot of ways, get beyond the ADHD.
Yeah, yeah. And also, they say after 50 that your ADHD, you know, lessens. And mine certainly did. But the other thing that I wanted to stress too is I've chosen, since I was 12 or 13 years old, to be non-medicated. So I have used music as my therapy. So I have a catchphrase, music versus medicine. And that has worked so well for me.
So you sing, that's great.
I sing, yes.
But do you play any musical instruments?
Yes.
Besides kazoo?
No, I don't play kazoo, but I play
You don't
flute.
Play kazoo?
No, but I play flute, accordion, and piano, and as well as voice. Yeah.
Well, then you could work on kazoo.
I could work on kazoo. Yeah.
That should go well with vocal, I would think.
Yeah, the right part. I'm going to be a new what's his name, Bobby. You know that. Don't worry. Be happy.
Yeah.
He is an incredible musician, incredible singer. And so he can think, like he can hum and sing Mozart parts. And then I love it when people come and will sing harmony with him or whatever. Oh, it's really, Bobby McFerrin. I know
Bobby McFerrin, right.
Yeah.
Incredible musician. We are great fans here, my wife and I, of a cappella music. We listen a lot to groups like Straight No Chaser.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with them?
No, don't know them.
They're a group of 10 students who went to college in Indiana, formed a group, sang some, then didn't do anything, and then later got back together. Now they have a number of albums. And it's all a cappella, which is really wonderful. And the harmony is great. And they sing one of my favorite Christmas songs, Who Spiked the Eggnog? You have to hunt it down and listen.
Oh,
to it.
I'll have really to look clever. That one up. That it's sounds really cool.
It's really clever. And but you know, music is so much a part of all of our lives. And I'm glad that for you, it really is able to mean so much and do so much. So from a professional standpoint, you graduated from college, and then what did you do?
Then I worked a lot in different arts organizations. So, and now, like, you know, because it took such a long time to get the degree and, you know, get myself established, and because I'm an arts consultant, so I deal in public relations, marketing, and fundraising. And I've had a various number of clients, you know, throughout the years. Now with COVID, some things are starting to, you know, pick up again. But it's me time. I've wanted to really do a cabaret evening. So I've just started working with this amazing music director. Her name's Dawn Martins. She's here right here in the Hamilton area. She's so talented and I just love working with her. So our plan is for September, we're going to do a backyard concert to, you know, try it out. We're going to do eight to 12 songs or so. And then we'll try it out. Her husband does all the sound and the lighting. And then we'll see how it goes. And if it's ready to be, you know, shipped, then we can start promoting it when I also do other book signing events.
How many people will be involved in that in terms of singing?
Yeah, Yeah, well, I've tried to do something different with my book signing events. I've tried to always sing. So, you know, do three or four pieces. And that's all gone over well with people that, you know, don't know me. But the other all exciting news is I'm working on an album. So this is the first time. You can find me on the internet. I've just done a whole Christmas community thing with the Dundas Baptist Church, which was our home church. My family was there for over 50 years. But Don put together this wonderful sort of community program during COVID. And so I've got a good piece on there. So, and now we're going to be putting together six songs to start an album. So I'm really excited about that. I've wanted to do an album for a long time. And so it's going to have some gospel inspiration style and one Christmas song.
Where can people find that? Where can people find your singing today?
Well, as soon as you can go to my website, and if you can sign up, I do a newsletter about every, you know, either once a year or every 6 months. And do you want me just to tell you the website or?
Well, sure. We'll do it later as well, but sure, go ahead.
So it's Emlian, Emlian, communications.org. And if you go to that website, and there's become a friend, join my website, just give us your name and your email address. We'd love to have you, you know, come on board, and then you'll be able to see my events. So, but the other real exciting big news is I've written a play about the book, and I've taken seven characters and created a 60-minute play about dealing with ADHD and using music therapy. So, and it's going to be called Stirring My Soul to Sing. And we're going to be premiering it in July here within the greater Toronto area. We're just waiting for confirmation, but I think it's going to be at Dundas Baptist Church because they have a wonderful sanctuary area that will just work perfectly. We're going to kind of do it what I refer to as opera and concert style. So music stands with scripts, and it's going to be kind of like an old time radio show. We're going to try that format out. And so I'm really, really excited about that. And information, how to get tickets will be on my website very soon.
Cool. Well, that's pretty, obviously pretty exciting all the way around in terms of the things that you've accomplished. I'm interested to know a little bit more about what it means to be an art consultant.
Oh, well, you know, I've worked in that position for 30 years. So, you know, working with different arts organizations, you learn a multiple level of skills. And so, excuse me, when I started off, I was working in marketing and I loved marketing. And then, you know, because I was in an apprenticeship program, so we had to move around, you know, and learn so many skills. So then I was taught, I think I was like a month or so in the box office. So I had to learn box office skills. And then, you know, so the events that I was working on in marketing promoted me to learn more about PR. And then also that summer, I learned fundraising as I was on the phone selling tickets for, you know, for the orchestra. So all of those skills became what I call now an arts consultant. So I've raised $2.5 million for arts and social sciences. And before I'm done, when I'm ready to retire, I'm aiming for, my goal is going to be $5 million. So I got another 2.5 to go.
You can do it.
I think I can do it. Yeah, because I'm not ready to retire yet, and I'm just in my early 60s. So
there you go.
Yeah.
So in addition to being an arts consultant, what are you doing to help prepare the next generation, whether it's in arts, or I'm more curious to hear what you would say about helping people in the future dealing with ADHD?
Absolutely. And my whole thoughts is, you know, I want to be able to give back. So as we're just starting to, you know, put things together for the production, I'm going to have two or three students that will be learning stage managing or, you know, and I'm hoping that these are kids that have some disability issues, you know, if it's ADHD or ADD, to be able to see how to use your energies, you know, is really important, and to have the right people there to help steward you, you know, in that process is really important. So we're going to do that. I've been speaking to Chamber of Commerce, you know, within the community as a public speaker, and talking about ADHD and disability in the classroom, and how important it is that the shaming stops, the blaming and the shaming stops, you know, and that disability is part of our lives as artists, as whatever that, you know, we continue to grow, and to have tolerance for people that have a difference, you know, than the normal person. And so those are really important things. And I have built that into my company, that we will have students or we will have assistants that have ADHD or whatever, and that, you know, we will be working with adults of disability in our projects that we're doing into the future.
Well, as clearly a person who has a lot of knowledge about ADHD, especially from the first person's point of view, have you found challenges using websites and the internet being a person experiencing ADHD?
Sometimes, like, I'm just, because we're, you know, we're coming out of COVID now, and just bombardment of emails, like, you know, I mean, I get over sometimes like over 150 emails. Now I got to start going through, get rid of the sales stuff.
But that takes care of 149 of them, but go ahead.
See, there you go, right? and so the thing is, I get exasperated. I get tired from
How about websites? Have you had challenges on going to visit web pages?
Not so much, no. Because I've just discovered now, and I love this, especially on, you know, on the Kindle books, whatever, that those kind of books and web pages can read back to you. Right. You don't have to read everything now. And I love this. And so now with the upgrade and, you know, software through Microsoft, web pages, if I'm tired or at it, you know, they can voice activate and read to me, which is wonderful.
One of the reasons that I asked the question is that, as you may know, if you've looked at me a lot, I work for a company called Accessibee, which is a company that manufactures products that make web pages and websites accessible. And Accessibee deals with a variety of disabilities and actually allows you to activate profiles to address specific issues, like in terms of ADHD, a lot of noise on websites and other things like that. And Accessibee has a profile specifically intended to deal with websites that can be a challenge for some people with ADHD to make them much more usable. So if you get a chance, you might check it out.
I would love to. Yeah, send me some more info about that.
Yeah, I will. ACCESSIBE. Yeah. I'll send you some information because it might very well be that there is a great partnership that can evolve from that.
That would be wonderful.
Accessibility likes to work with people who have disabilities and who know more than we do. So
it's
good to establish that. But the way it works is that there are a number of profiles that Accessibility deals with, and ADHD and other cognitive disabilities are profiles that can be activated. So it would certainly make sense for us to get you and some of the folks at Accessibility together.
Awesome.
Well, we have been doing this a long time, and we could go on and on and on, but we both probably have lots to do. But I'd like to do this again, but I really thank you for your time being here today to talk about a lot of this. And I'd like you to go through again, if people want to get a hold of you, not sending you sales emails, how can they reach out to you?
Okay. So my website is www.emlincommunications, so communications.org, emlincommunications.org. Now, there's an easier way to remember if you just Google Walker or Stirring Walker ADHD. It will also bring up all the information that you need to know about me and the book.
And if people want to email you?
You can email me at info@emlincommunications.org.
Well, thank you very much for being here. I know it's taken us a while to get together, but I am so glad that we finally were able to do it and have a chance to really chat. Oh, I've got to ask, do you do a podcast?
I do, and I just started it. It's called The Arts Report, Music for the ADHD Brain. And it's on Spotify. It's on a couple others. You can find it on my website. We're going to be adding some more to it. It's just been, time to, I've got some programs in the can that just have to be edited. And thank God I have somebody who's amazing that does that. I don't have to do that. That's not my specialty.
That's not what you do.
No, that's not what I do.
Well,
I like being able to have a producer say, hey, what do you think about this? And
do you deal with some of the Potapalooza folks?
I'm just starting to get into that. So, and been very grateful of the new connections that we've made there. So,
and of course,
Michael, you're one of those. So that's wonderful.
Well, again, what's the name of the podcast?
So it's called The Arts Report, Music for the ADHD Brain.
Well, if you ever need a guest to come on and talk about something esoteric or another, let me know. Would love to do that.
Yeah, because we want to talk about disability as well. So, and overcoming disability. So love to have you on, Michael, when we can schedule that.
Let's do it.
All right.
Well, Ian Walker, thanks again for being here. And I want to thank you for listening to us today. I hope you've enjoyed your time with Ian. Reach out to him. I am sure that he won't treat your email as a sales email.
No.
He's responded to mine pretty well. So I guess he like me can distinguish between what's real and what's not. But I want to thank you all for listening to Unstoppable Mindset. We'd sure appreciate a 5-star rating wherever you're listening to this podcast. And if you'd like to reach out and talk to me, possibly be a guest on the podcast, or just share your thoughts, you can go to www.michaelhingson.com/podcast. That's www.michaelhingson.com/podcast. Or email me at michaelhi@accessibility.com. Accessibility is spelled ACCESSIBE. And again, we mentioned the concept of Accessibe dealing with a variety of disabilities. If you want to learn more about Accessibe, please visit www.accessibe.com. But again, thanks for listening. And Ian, thanks very much for being here today.
Thank you so much, Michael. It's been great hanging out with you today.
It's been my honor as well. Thank you.
You have been listening to the Unstoppable Mindset Podcast. Thanks for dropping by. I hope that you'll join us again next week and in future weeks for upcoming episodes. To subscribe to our podcast and to learn about upcoming episodes, please visit www.michaelhingson.com/podcast. Michael Hingson is spelled MichaelHingson. While you're on the site, please use the form there to recommend people who we ought to interview in upcoming editions of the show. And also, we ask you and urge you to invite your friends to join us in the future. If you know of anyone or any organization needing a speaker for an event, please email me at speaker@michaelhingson.com. I appreciate it very much. To learn more about the concept of blinded by fear, please visit www.michaelhingson.com/blinded by fear. And while you're there, feel free to pick up a copy of my free ebook entitled Blinded by Fear. The Unstoppable Mindset Podcast is provided by AccessCast, an initiative of Accessibe, and is sponsored by Accessibe. Please visit www.accessibe.com. Accessibe is spelled A-C-C-E-S-S-I-B-E. There you can learn all about how you can make your website inclusive for all persons with disabilities and how you can help make the internet fully inclusive by 2025. Thanks again for listening. Please come back and visit us again next week.